This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Has kids' sport become too expensive? From registration fees, uniforms, to petrol. Has playing sport become at risk of becoming a luxury? And when we look at the current cost of living crisis, is sport the first thing to go? Good morning, my name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning, ABC reporter Jeremy Story-Carter. Jeremy, the implications of kids not being able to afford to play sport, they're quite widespread. They don't just impact that individual child and family. Mm. It actually impacts us all as a community.
Yeah, the flow-on effects are very real, not just from a health perspective, but in terms of connection. I mean, sport is such a vital way of building connection, not just between young people, but communities more generally. But as you say, we are in a moment where families are considering every single cost every single week. And with kids' sport, once you start to break it down, that means uniforms, that means fees, registration, petrol, as you say, alone is a massive one.
And this has been a concern that has been building for some time now, and this is something that we've discussed previously on this show. So the issue's not going away, you know, but what are the solution? Things like, what are the role of sponsors? What should sponsors actually be paying for? What should their money that they're handing over be spent on? But then are even sponsors drying up?
Well, the thing is, in small communities, it can actually be really uncomfortable and sometimes impossible to just keep going back to the same businesses again and again. A lot of them are doing it tough, a lot of those small businesses. And that's before you get to the idea, you know, that all of this so often relies on the same pool of local volunteers and the same local pockets pitching in.
So we are hearing some really great solutions. Clubs are taking solutions into their own hands, and they are finding ways to make sure that young people and children in their community can afford to play sport. So has your local club become too expensive, and how do we make it more affordable so anyone who wants to play can?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Jeremy Story-Carter with you as we look at the cost of community sport. Jeremy, when I was growing up, it was pretty common for kids to play multiple sports, right? You might play tennis and netball and maybe even basketball. Like, you could potentially have played three sports, and that's not even including swimming lessons. I reckon those days are gone unless you are rich, unless you are uber wealthy.
And that is a real shame as far as I'm concerned. I think there's something actually beautiful in being able to throw kids at, you know, the interest points that they may have, give them a chance to be exposed to different team environments, different sort of social settings, but different sports, and see what sticks and see what is actually going to be the thing that they pursue for years on. And I know personally, sport was a huge part of my life. It still is. You know, I used to play basketball for a couple of teams, and that would mean, you know, one Friday night, one Saturday. That means multiple uniforms. That meant travel, you know, not just to those stadiums, but also to two trainings for those teams. And now I think about that, those are enormous costs.
Absolutely.
And I really would, there wouldn't be a lot of families that could easily absorb that, particularly across multiple children.
Not to mention the fact that kids grow out of uniforms in about 2 seconds. All of a sudden, I put my daughter's basketball uniform on her the other day. I'm like, did I put this in the dryer or have you grown? And then all of a sudden you start to think, oh God, okay, we need a new uniform. They're so expensive.
Counterpoint to that, I tried on my junior basketball uniform the other day, and I think my mum must have been onto something because it was like triple XL.
Why did you try on your junior?
I was short. I'm playing basketball at the moment, and I tried it on because it was the only colour it matched, and somehow it still fits. And I think mum knew to buy a massive jersey so I would be swimming in it when I was a kid, but potentially have some utility later in life.
Before we have a chat to Dr. Rochelle Imey, who is the Director of Physical Activity and Sports Insights at Federation University, Tess has called from Geelong. Morning, Tess.
Hello. I just wanted to touch base. My son is an avid athletes who love community sports, but we kind of really had to choose between different sports dependent on cost. So he really loved the idea of playing soccer, but the football club was free. So our local footy club has decided that all registration for juniors is free, and they also recycle all the old footy boots.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyone who grows out of them, you return them, and they're for the kids the next season.
There's lots of really great initiatives, Tess, that are happening, but I think Tess is onto something, Jeremy, when you pick a sport purely dependent on what you think it's going to cost, because as we will discuss today, some sporting codes cost a hell of a lot more than others.
Yeah, well, this already from Laura, whose seven-year-old wants to play soccer this year. The club's fees are $600. When I question the club, it turns out that the fee subsidises the older players who are paid. The funding model is wrong. That is contentious. And equally, another texter says the further one goes in gymnastics, the more ridiculous the price becomes. I'm so happy my daughter quit at level 8.
See, and you don't want to be happy that your child quits simply because you can't afford it. And if you reverse that, and if your child shows promise and they want to go further, then the costs just go up. Dr. Rochelle Imey is the Director of Physical Activity and Sport Insights Group at Federation University and joins us from our Ballarat studios. Rochelle, this is a topic very close to your heart, isn't it? The cost of sport and the idea that some kids aren't playing sports simply because of cost. It just doesn't, it's not right.
Oh, absolutely. And good morning from sunny Ballarat. Yeah, cost is a major barrier. And as the cost of living increases, we are seeing declines in children playing sport, but also children playing multiple sports. And like you said earlier about people choosing which sport they play based on the cost.
Well, and so talking about choosing sports based on their cost, why is it that some sports in particular, and I'm going to name soccer here, are just so much more expensive than others?
Yeah, team sports generally across the board are cheaper than some individual sports that may have private coaches that you're paying for. So those that are based on volunteer coaches are generally cheaper. But I am surprised at the difference in cost even within a given sport, let alone the costs across sport. And that's something that we want to do a research into, is understanding the actual true costs of participation in sport, and not just the membership costs, but what are the whole costs in terms of participation.
Because as a society, and certainly from a government perspective, we spend money on making, you know, trying to ensure kids' health is as good as it can be and all sorts of preventative things. It strikes me that sporting clubs and participation in sport is a fantastic thing that we're kind of already trying to fund in other ways. Like, how does that figure in the mix, and should there be a more direct support of these kind of grassroots clubs?
Yeah, I think the cost of membership or registration is often set by the club. So it's the board or the committee that's setting those fees, and they've obviously got to have financial stability across the clubs. But and often there's difference of membership, whether you've got multiple children, it might be cheaper, or a family discount, which is great. But a perfect example is a local golf club. My 16-year-old son last year, it cost $100 for him to play. We could afford that. He sometimes plays with me or his mates. Then when he turns 17, it's $550. So it went from $100 to $550, and it's not his primary sport. So we haven't paid that. But why is there such an increase?
Yeah, what's the difference?
He's still a student.
Yeah.
And yet you look at the membership options, and it's cheaper if you're over 70. So I'd like to see, actually, you know, who's on the committee making those decisions. Do they have young children? Are they thinking about the youth? We need diversity in those decision-making, so we're making it fair and equitable for all.
Really interesting insights from Tony on the text line here. Look, if we took away the social pressure to have merch and all the stuff that goes with sport now, it would make it a lot easier. The other night I saw 10, let's just say, large branded drink bottles.
Large, oversized, ridiculous sized drink bottles.
That are very in vogue at the moment. At our netball training, that's nearly $1,000 worth of drink bottles. The pressure on children to conform is massive. Thanks to social media, it has definitely impacted that space. Just that idea that even to participate, and I've seen this from youth sport, where it's not just enough to rock up to sport. You need to have the sweet stuff, the nice shoes, the nice jacket, all that sort of stuff. That all adds to it.
This text, 3 kids in gymnastics, it costs $10,000 a year between travel and competitions. My jaw literally swung open when I read that. Alison's in Maribyrnong. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. It was interesting that you're having this conversation today. My 8-year-old just wanted to take up soccer. He does taekwondo and basketball. The day after the cost of soccer came out, which for registration, I think there was a 70% drop in the amount of kids that turned up to the next session.
Wow.
Easily. And from what I've heard from the parents, this club is half to a third of the cost of the clubs in the surrounding suburbs because they're trying to keep the costs down. But the drop in attendance was very, very significant.
And it's interesting too, Alison, because we're going to go a bit deeper into soccer in just a tick, so stay listening. But when there's only so much an individual club and community can do to bring down the costs, and we're going to hear some really great initiatives in the moment, things like sharing uniforms and boots and all sorts of stuff. But if the registration, if the fundamentals of how the club is structured and you can't change that, then something at the top, Alison, needs to change, you would think.
Well, I mean, the thing is, he plays the sport because of his health. He has some health reasons, so I really pursue him being in the sport, but I couldn't do it without help from my family for him to maintain it. But having awareness of how much the costs are in other sports, I didn't think that the soccer one was unreasonable, but then when I found out how much surrounding clubs were charging, it was quite significant. But I agree with your comments about the merch as well. Basketball, you've got to have the jumper, the beanie, the socks, the all training tops.
Basketball's a shocker for that, I swear.
Yeah. The Nike shoes, the right branded ball, it comes in incremental costs, whereas soccer was more of a one-off cost.
Alison, you've raised so many interesting points. Dr. Rochelle, there's soccer, which we'll go into, but when we talk about change. Yes, I mean, I've lost track of the amount of times I've done any type of program where a community says, well, if we want to make change, we just do it ourselves and we make that change. But sometimes that change does have to come from the top. Does there need to be, with soccer, either a change in the way they fund how that game works? So rather than the grassroots funding the elite start funding the grassroots like in AFL? Or can local governments step in some way?
Yeah, I think it's a really good issue about you're talking about elite and community participation. And one of the callers talked about the junior registration subsidising the senior players. And I think that's a big issue. You know, my son's a 17 and Braden plays footy and he's playing seniors this year. And he got offered one club a contract and pay a playmates. And I said, this is just insane that you're offering to pay just a local footballer. And then that drives up the cost for everyone else in participation. The one-off costs are often quite a big hit on families. Local tennis association that I'm involved in, you only pay $70 registration and then you play $12 a week. And so that actually also helps it's an adult competition, so we don't always want to commit every week. So you basically pay as you go, and it's only that $12 a week, so that can help out instead of that upfront high fee.
I want to get into sponsors in just a moment as well, and then you've got really, you know, uber local sponsors. You'll have your local fruit and veg shop or your pub or whoever it may be that will sponsor a team. But then you've got your corporates, right? And the interests between the two are different. Lots of people already texting in talking about whether it be a major supermarket or whoever and the role of sponsors as well.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Jeremy Story Carter with you. Dr. Rochelle Imey, Director of Physical Activity and Sports Insight Group at Federation University, joins you from Ballarat as well.
And Daryl Hoare now joins us from the mighty Wagunya Football and Netball Club in northeast Victoria on the banks of the Murray. All of this would have been resonating a bit with you, I imagine, Daryl. It strikes me it's this time of year, you're trying to boost junior numbers, you're trying to get as many kids through, particularly in the footy team. How is it going in Wagunya?
Yeah, look, it's definitely, we've definitely gone forward compared to the last couple of years, which is fantastic. You know, we've been a club that's struggled to get juniors for the last couple of years. We are actually rich in history with our junior program with flags and premierships and things like that. So it's not as if we haven't had a lot of success with our juniors, but unfortunately, it's just getting very hard to find them.
Yeah, and in your part of the world, there's travel involved. There's, as you say, there's competition from other clubs as well who might be able to offer younger kids different sort of things to the type that your club is set up to do. But what are some of the things that you as a club are doing to try and, at a community level, make this possible for you know, those families who might not have a lot of money to throw at junior sport?
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, you got to start thinking outside the square. I mean, the comment there before of, you know, once upon a time, you know, during summer you played tennis or cricket, and during winter you played football. I mean, those days are gone. So you've got to try and make it attractive to the parents and try and save them some costs. You know, we've got a boot recycling thing. So you know, if a kid has a pair of boots that no longer fit him, he can bring the boots in and put them on a shelf and find a pair of boots that fits him. You know, that's been quite successful, and we're very happy with that.
Yeah.
It's simple, but it's so practical.
Yeah, parents must absolutely love that, Darryl, do they?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's part of the cost that goes out of it. You know, the comment made there before about, you know, how committees are setting registrations and that, you know, we don't get a say in that. I mean, the registration for kids is purely to cover their insurance, and that's set by the league. Now, it's as far as I know, for juniors in our league, it's $50. So, you know, they pay the $50, and if we say we've got 20 kids, then, you know, we have to charge those 20 kids $50, and that money goes directly to the AFL. So we don't actually get a say in that. You know, it's is it reasonable? Is it unreasonable? Well, you know, it is what it is. So I mean, we can't change that.
You can only change what you can change,
yeah,
can't you?
And in a smaller,
that's right.
We mentioned the idea of sponsors as well, and in a smaller community like yours, you know, I can imagine there's a tension in terms of not wanting to have to go back to the same business, not being able to go back to the same business all the time. Are there other ways that younger kids' participation is being supported, you know, around the club?
Yeah, look, definitely. You know, like I said, you know, one of our major issues this year is an under-17s age group. You know, we're really struggling there. Yeah, you know, we will pull something together, but you know, to save the cost, we some people in the club approached some sponsors and they put some money in, so the kids will get a free training shirt. You know, it's just that's a saving to the parents. You know, all the kids can be wearing the same stuff, but they'll get a free training shirt.
And it's worth appreciating that there is actually a real flow up quality to this, because on game day, when you've got the juniors playing, if you don't have those juniors there, that might mean also a little bit less money at the canteen. It might mean, from a parent's perspective, maybe a little bit less money behind the bar, or, you know, just on a pie or something, and certainly through the gate. I can imagine this sort of flows throughout the whole club, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when, you know, I was listening to the conversation there about soccer, you know, how much it is. I mean, you know, within our club, of course, there's a salary cap set. To be competitive, you've virtually got to spend that salary cap to be competitive. And, you know, the club has to try and come up with making that money somehow. You know, the lady who said before, well, you know, her son was offered so much to play football. Well, you know what? There's probably another five clubs that are willing to increase that offer. It's tough. You know, and, you know, the point of all this, you know, and we find it is, you know, at the end of the day, it's volunteers that need to raise this money.
Yeah,
you know, it's you know, clubs.
It's a whole other conversation,
and
that's right,
you know, and an important one. Hand on heart, it's super important.
But that flow-on effect is not just to do with cost, though, too. That has huge issues in terms of participation in the future. If those children aren't playing at a certain age, they're not going to be able to come back in a couple of years. And we've got a research report which will be released by Vic Health and State Government this week or next week, showing that participation has really dropped for those 10 and 11-year-olds. which is a massive concern, because if they're not playing club sport at 10 or 11, you can't just rock up and enter at 15 if you don't have those foundation skills and confidence and competence to play.
Very, very true.
No, that's right.
And I think
that's
we can
right.
all agree that, yeah, participation, we'd like to see it trending upward wherever possible. Daryl, we know you've got a big month ahead of everything starting to kick off in the footy and netball. I hope to make it up for a game shortly. thanks so much for joining us on The Conversation Hour today.
Yeah, no, can I just say in finishing, we've actually identified that we're going to try and introduce an all-abilities team to the club, designed around bringing families back to the club, but that kicks off next Wednesday. So if any right. listeners out there are interested in something like that, please let us know.
Head on down to Wiganya Football and Netball Club. Daryl, thanks so much for joining us today, mate.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Before we have a chat to Ryan Holloway, who's the Chief Partnerships Officer at the Australian Sports Foundation, Rochelle, that flow-on effect that you touched on there, I mean, when we're talking about regional and rural communities, the lifeblood of sporting groups is super, super important. So when we talk about, well, we can't afford to play X, Y and Z now, it's not just that individual child or family that feels the impacts. It's the entire town.
Oh, absolutely. You know, community sport's the lifeblood of rural and regional towns. I come from a small town of Blyth in South Australia and, you know, a farming community, and everyone rocked up to the local sport on the weekends because it was all about connecting with the community and for the farmers to whinge about the lack of rain. But, you know, people were volunteering, they were spectating, they were playing. It was a real social hub, but it also had an economic flow-on effect to the town in terms of the spend and going to the, you know, maybe the pub for a drink afterwards. But what happens though too is when you lose those players, those teams often fold and you have amalgamations, and once you have those amalgamations, it has a big economic and social impact on those towns that don't have those local yeah. clubs anymore.
Ryan Holloway is the Chief Partnerships Officer at the Australian Sports Foundation and has been listening to pretty much most of this program. Ryan, a warm welcome back to the Conversation Hour. How do we make sport affordable for all? Because I have quite honestly lost track of the amount of texts that are coming in saying we've had to drop this, we've had to drop that, you know, we're having three kids to do gymnastics when you take in travel and competitions, it's costing it that family $10,000. That's just out of reach for the majority of people. How do we reduce the fees?
Yeah, look, the cost of sport or the sports gap that we're seeing is something that's rather concerning for the Australian sports sector. At the Australian Sports Foundation, we believe that it's the funding mix that can really help reduce the barriers to participation, particularly for families in regional and rural areas. And that really has to do with championing sport as a cause, as a philanthropic cause. Often sport relies on the sponsorship, commercial money, and the registrations and things like that. And we really haven't tapped into the opportunity that the philanthropic market offers a sector.
What do you mean by that? Sorry, you're talking about getting philanthropists involved in local sport. In what way?
Absolutely, yeah. So the philanthropic market in Australia is around $13 billion, and we're talking there, you know, all giving causes and charities. And sport, if we look at some of the money that we've helped raise for Australian sport, last year we closed out at just under $80 million into sport, still, you know, less than 1% of that market. So we feel that philanthropy has a big role to play in helping increase the funding mix for sport to help reduce the barriers to participation.
Is there an issue in the fragmentation of sport? I mean, we've listed more than probably a dozen sports at this point and different activities. They all have their own sort of representative bodies. They all then filter down in a regional sense. Is there a difficulty that the makeup of different sporting organisations is so diffuse that it's hard for all of those clubs to benefit in the money that might be coming in?
Yeah, I think, Jeremy, look, I think all sports have that have a different structure, and I think from their national bodies through to state bodies and then associations and local clubs that that can be somewhat fragmented. We do try and work with sport at all levels. Our real focus is on that community grassroots sports clubs to make sure that we can keep them viable, reduce barriers to participation for people in their communities. But we're also working with the upper level of sport too, the national bodies and state bodies, to look at how we might be able to work with them to reduce participation as well and help support their community.
So are they listening seriously, do you think, Ryan? Are they going to are they going to pay for anything? Because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, well, we'll waiver these fees or those fees, or what sort of solutions are potentially on the table for state government?
Definitely. I can't necessarily comment on state government, but what I can comment is the work that we do within the sports sector. So we are very much working with national and state sporting bodies on things like hardship funds and community support funds. And even that's filtered down into the community level as well, at association level. So we've worked with a number of different associations in a wide variety of sports, from AFL footy to football or soccer and other codes. To help reduce, registration fees for families that are, doing it tough and looking at having their kids drop out. So we're definitely looking at that and trying to work with them to make their sports more affordable and more attractive.
Ryan, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Ryan Holloway, the Chief Partnership Officer at the Australian Sports Foundation. And just a tick, Rochelle, we might get you to comment on whether or not you think those initiatives and those incentives and those funds, which sometimes can be tricky for people to find out about, actually work.
Oh, just a really important point from Liz that I think we have touched upon in previous shows, but it does bear repeating. It's not just the cost of kids' sports that's a deterrent. Parents have to spend a lot of time taking kids to training and games. And as a working parent, it's so difficult to juggle jobs and all the sporting activities. These things have a way of all feeding into one another.
Rochelle, do they work, the grants? You know, there's some, I know in different parts of Australia, there are different programs and payback schemes that we have. Do individuals, do clubs know about what's available, what's out there, and are any of them significant enough to actually make a difference?
Yeah, look, I think the Australian Sports Foundation has a wonderful platform. It's actually very easy to use, but maybe, like you said, about maybe local clubs don't have the knowledge about that as much, and we need to make sure we get that out there. But you can go online, and within an hour you can set up a sort of GoFundMe page for your club to say, okay, we'd like some support for some uniforms or some equipment. So that's the grassroots end, and then you've got the elite end. And I actually set one up for my son Jared, who's 17, trying to be an elite tennis player. The cost of that, trying to travel internationally, is absolutely absurd. He's number four in Australia for his age and gets no support through tennis except a Yonex racket sponsorship. So those pages...
That's a whole other conversation, Rochelle, isn't it? So if you have promise, and you're potentially going to represent your country, then how do you afford it?
It's so hard. I mean, Jared lives regionally. He's on the train going down to Melbourne all the time. He's trying to go overseas, but it's very expensive. But if we don't try and give him those opportunities now... he can't try and be a professional athlete later on. You know, he goes through a pair of shoes every 3 weeks at $250 a pop.
Oh, my God.
Let alone travel and accommodation.
You need a shoe sponsor real quick.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Jeremy Story Carter with you. Dr. Rochelle Imey joins you from our Ballarat studios as well. She's the Director of Physical Activity and Sports Insight Group at Federation Uni.
And a plea on the text line to acknowledge that some sports require a lot of personal equipment in addition to uniforms. So baseball, at a minimum, requires a helmet, bat glove, and also batting gloves if you're a catcher. $500 plus for protective catching gear. It might be similar for hockey and cricket, and lacrosse, all pretty similar. Howard in Melbourne probably has a little bit of an insight into that. Howard, I believe you're in the baseball orbit. Does any of this resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been scouting now for about 30 years, and I've seen the ebb and flow of kids taking up the sport. And I've seen the costs escalate to the point now where if you're an elite baseball player and you play for your state and play for your country, it's upwards of $15,000 a year.
Wow.
And that's it. Just if you're just a club player that makes a state team and wants to go to the national championships, it's probably about $5,000 a year. That's not including equipment.
Far
that's
out.
That's just the cost.
And Howard, that is a phenomenal amount of money that is beyond the reach of a lot of people. And yet, as a scout, I imagine you want as diverse a range of potential participants in baseball to draw from. So does that risk it narrowing down to only the wealthy, you know, and the children of wealthy who can afford to be in your sort of window?
Unfortunately, that's true. And that's only part of it. You know, you mentioned the cost of equipment and the cost of the fees. In Australia, in the 1990s, there was probably two paid administrators at the national level, and the state level were all pretty much volunteers. There might have been a secretary or somebody that was paid for administrative stuff part-time. Now there are over 50 full-time jobs in baseball, either administration or coaching in Australia. So they have to raise whatever that cost is, however many millions of dollars that is, they have to raise before they can roll one ball onto the field and play one game.
Mm.
So that cost has blown out.
Wow.
We were signing 15 to 20 players per year in the 90s and the aughts, and then now it's down to about 5 players per year. Now that's a measure of the health of the sport because these are your elite.
I know. And the other thing too is something like baseball in Australia, it's still almost a fringe sport, so it's going to get harder and harder to be able to get sponsors. Really great to hear from you, Howard. Thank you.
Great insights.
Anthony Frost is the General Manager of Academies and Community at Western United Footy Club. Anthony, the moment we started talking about the cost of sport, an influx of texts coming in talking about local soccer clubs and the structure of how soccer is funded. So you've got the bottom funding the top. Is that likely to ever change, do you think?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rochelle. It's a significant issue in our game. I think it's something that the national body is sort of highlighted as a key issue to try and target. But yeah, there seems to be just way too many barriers at, I guess, different levels of our game that sort of impact the cost of sport. So yeah, it's unfortunate that a lot of the time we see, let's say, junior participation fees essentially going to senior players to pay for their weekly wages, which is really disappointing. I think you could look at a number of different ways to maybe navigate around that challenge, but interesting sort of comment earlier around having a salary cap, but again, very difficult to stop that from happening or working around those sorts of challenges. But,
and it must be such a push pull. You know, the whole sport is in a constant effort to level up again and again in terms of its professionalism, its skill, and of course then that builds in things
in order
like
to
payments,
keep sponsors
and keep a local interest in it. And yet, when I was growing up at school in the 90s and early 2000s, soccer ball out on a pitch, it became the thing, and that didn't seem like an expensive thing to do. So what are, you mentioned some other barriers, what are some of those other barriers that seem to just be ratcheting it up? I mean, we are getting a lot of texts about soccer/football.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like a preconceived idea that soccer has to be, or is one of these sports where it has to be organised. You have to have a qualified coach. You have to have great facilities, all of this equipment. But I think from a societal perspective or a sporting cultural perspective, how can we change that preconceived idea that, it doesn't have to be all the bells and whistles, but how can we really lean on our volunteers, on our parents, and just sort of take it backwards sort of step in terms of the professionalism, especially at junior community.
Bring the fun back. It's interesting that you said, that it has to be organised. And one thing that I've noticed probably over the last decade is the influx of just kind of loosely organised social sport and soccer games and friends getting together, whether it be footy or basketball or soccer, and people creating almost like social clubs where there's no registration, you just meet at a local ground or court or whatever it may be. Are you noticing that in the world of, and I say soccer so we can differentiate between AFL, but are you noticing that in the world of soccer, Anthony?
Yeah, and I think that sort of links to the cost of living pressures that everyone experiences. But I think, soccer is a sport, it's very diverse, got a whole range of different multicultural groups that, they look to, as was mentioned before, it's a way for them to connect And there are some great initiatives out there. I know within our area in the Wyndham City Council region, there's a program that, yeah, encourages people just to turn up on a Friday night, come together and play.
I like that.
And, you know, that unstructured free play is a
but
fantastic
then,
way.
But then if you're
to,
a kid,
for,
right,
connection.
That limits opportunities, doesn't it?
Well, yes.
If you're really
no.
good.
Yeah, that's right. So it's interesting. There's been some studies around the benefit of unstructured play at a younger age group, and that's one of the one of the biggest factors towards playing at a high level in an older age group. Mm. So the more unstructured play at a younger age group will actually be better for you in the long run. So
the scouts
really
have just got to get a bit more creative.
Isn't
right?
that why we always lose to the Brazilians? Because they're always playing, you know, from such a young age.
Absolutely.
And they have all this amazing technique, and we're trying Absolutely. To train them like AFL players.
Yeah, I'd say as much as we want to professionalise things, and maybe there's a bit of parental pressure to have things structured and look a certain way, let's try and remove that as a barrier and go back to just simplifying sport at a community level.
I agree with that. We need different opportunities to play, and I think too we need to think about what are some of the solutions to try and minimise the costs. And I think there's a range of different things we can do. I've spoken about this before about home and away shorts for the local footy team, and my boys said, well, it's tradition. You always have two pairs of shorts, one for home and one and away. And I said, but you can only wear one pair at a time.
Exactly.
And they've since changed that.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, some traditions we need to keep, but some we need to question why. Why do we have this? And then it is a barrier. Why do we have association logoed socks when we're only marketing and selling that?
Well, even uniforms as a whole, Rochelle. Like, could you just not wear shorts and a T-shirt and then have a series of bibs?
Yeah, I think too, but team and club owned uniforms is a lot cheaper because they can just wash them and recycle them each year, and they'll last quite a long time. But there is sometimes an issue when you have sponsorships on those uniforms. When the sponsorship changes, you can't then use those uniforms. So we need to be smart and think about sustainability of uniforms and equipment and solutions to try and minimise the cost.
That's such a good point. You can't really be putting gaffer tape over the top of one sponsor and busting
they
out
do.
The
they
Sharpie.
They literally sew on the new sponsor and stitch
over
it on.
The top.
Yeah.
Anthony Frost, it's been great to speak with you. Thanks so much. Really interesting. General Manager of Academies and Community at Western United Footy Club. Let's have a chat to Anna, who's been waiting so patiently in Bryagalon. Hi, Anna.
No problem. I'm from a very small town. We've got one general store, so there's not a lot of businesses to sponsor. I'd be happy to sponsor a local kid, Future Champions, we could call it, and I pay their fees and buy a uniform for them.
I love that idea, Anna.
Because the kids then know someone in the town cares enough to support them to play.
Do you reckon people would be on board if you spoke about it?
Well, we're a pretty generous community. Yeah. The thing is, before I've always thought of it in terms of giving to the club. I never thought of it like the Smith family, where you're actually supporting
an individual.
A child.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a really powerful idea, Anna, and speaks to your sense of generosity. Rich, I have to say, and we had the example earlier from Rochelle, actually, you mentioned it, the idea of a sort of GoFundMe, crowdfunding type approach. I have seen that crop up in my own sort of circles and people putting out similar things for either their own, like individuals themselves or their own clubs. And while I think it's great that it can draw a really positive and direct response from people who want to contribute, it just speaks to me to the idea that this isn't necessarily working because for every one person who can do that and every one club who can do that, there are a lot who are either not going to have the you know, ability, capacity or networks to draw on. And it's a pretty tough thing to put yourself out there to be asking for money in that way.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? You have to do it with dignity and you have to do it...
Sustainability as well. Yeah. So it's not just... And if you have to go back and create another crowdfunding thing in a year or two's time, it's gets pretty uncomfortable. So it, for me, that as effective as that can be in the short term, it doesn't feel like the long-term solution.
All the different sports that you hear about. But here's one that I had never thought about, and I'm so glad that we received this text, because this is the thing, right? It impacts all different types of sports and athletics. Irish dancing, wigs, shoes, makeup, fake tan, dresses, $4,000. Then you've got nationals, competitions, team outfits, and all of the worlds overseas if you're good enough. But that's the thing, Rochelle. It's all sorts. My daughter does aerobics. It sounds really daggy, but it's actually really great and really fun. But not many people do it. And then all of a sudden, all these costs came from nowhere for something, Rochelle, that I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds like fun. You can do it with school. Yada, yada, yada. You're in the nationals. We need to book flights to Queensland.
And that's the trouble. It's, we want everyone to have the opportunity to play, those at the local level starting off, but then those that are quite talented and want to see how they can pursue their development in a sport. And as soon as you're getting into those state and national and international teams and competitions, the costs just absolutely skyrocket. And unfortunately for most, it's just not affordable.
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Rochelle Hunt and Jeremy Story Carter with you, from Irish dancing to soccer. Jeremy, the costs are huge, and it's not just the sport. It's all the stuff, right,
that
wraps
the kit,
around.
The everything, yeah. It builds up as an industry. It builds up as administration, and suddenly these entrenched ideas of you just have to do that, you just have to have that thing baked in that costs that extra money, that requires that license, that has this insurance attached to it. It all just builds up. And to that very point, a text comes in saying, oh, I guess you're saying that if Pele was born in Milton today, he may never get a chance to play for Australia. And I actually think that is one of those kind of crucial ideas. And it's almost what Howard was saying when he was talking about scouting baseball. If these sports are reduced to only the wealthy who can actually participate in a competition sense.
Oh,
that's a shocker.
Absolutely. We do see a lot higher participation in those areas that have higher socioeconomic status. And in this report that's about to be released, one of my biggest concerns is the really low participation in children for metropolitan growth areas. So these are probably areas where people and families are really hit by the cost of living and interest rate rises on their mortgages, and the participation of children is extremely low in those areas.
Well, someone who's probably nodding on the other line, on the other end of the line, is Simon Davies. He's the CEO of Team Sports for All. And Simon, I have to say, the moment I mentioned this, the very first text that came in said, you have to speak to Team Sports for All. And I was very pleased to know that we were certainly going to do that. You have been helping families that actually experience quite severe financial hardship to ensure that that means that their kids can still play sport. How important is it for charities, for non-for-profits like yours, to ensure that anyone who wants to play sport can?
It's something that we're really focused on. Our charity is a not-for-profit that works with severely financially disadvantaged children, and we help connect them into the community through playing team sport. So there are an increasing number of people in this place that just simply can't afford to play it. And there are so many benefits that come from playing team sport. Obviously, the physical benefits, the health that comes around that. But from a mental health perspective, that really is the piece that we see make the most impact, where they're connecting with their team, with their new friends, with the families. And this isn't just the kids too. This is the parents and the carers will also get involved with the other parents in the teams as well, and it gives them something to look forward to. It gives them something to people to connect with, and is a really positive way for them to improve their personal and physical mental health.
Yeah, and I can't help but notice, Simon, that you started by saying connect them to communities rather than say give them a pair of boots or something like that. It really speaks to the idea that I imagine this is something you think about, that if those who are on the economically disadvantaged side of the ledger, those connection points can actually be really hard to establish if you don't have the kind of social access that might come with having more money. So how important do you think that is for the work that you do, and more generally for participation in sport at a really grassroots level?
Yeah, Jeremy, it's huge. There's a real barrier where kids that just can't get access to playing community sport miss out on these social connections that that just simply wouldn't be there otherwise. And they will otherwise, you know, be isolated from all these different opportunities. They get involved in different things. But what we see is when we get them connected to a local team, they are far more engaged, not just with the team, which is huge, but also with the people within it. They make connections outside that they often create lifelong friends, as I think any of your listeners know that have kids playing sports, that these are often long-term friends. And it keeps them in better circles oftentimes. So,
and it connects you to other things that are happening in your community. So whether it be the children or the parents, you chat, right? And you share ideas and knowledge and contacts and networks, all sorts of things. So if there are other issues in your life, you're potentially going to get support in other areas as well. It's sort of that village model.
That's right. And we see that happen a lot where the connections that the children make and also the parents. So the parents will have these new connections, and they're not seen as team sports for all kids. We provide them with the uniforms and the everything that they need
to
be the same as everyone else. The very top of the club will know, but nobody else does, the coaches. They're just one of the others. And that means that, you know, they do have these new connections and networks they would never have had. So we see job opportunities come up. People just say, yeah, come over to our organisation, help out with this. And it gives the parents this, and even the life-changing moments that they have giving their children this opportunity to play sport, which they never would have had. It gives them that sense of purpose as well. But it literally changes the lives of these kids too. It really does.
How do people actually reach out? Because I know that just asking for help can be such a barrier.
It's almost like our caller before who wanted to sponsor a child, isn't it, Simon?
Yeah, and that's fantastic, and then we depend on that kind of community support to be able to do what we do. And we don't just provide the issues and the registrations, we support them. So we give them monthly checkups, make sure they're going okay, and we have some great volunteers that help us do that. So essentially what becomes really important for us is making sure that we stay connected to these communities and to these children and families, and keep them embedded in the communities and participate in the long term. So we want to see them play year after year after year. This isn't
season. That are listening think, oh gosh, I wish we had someone involved from Team Sports for All in our club. Can they potentially contact you? Can someone maybe who thinks, okay, I've got a cousin, a nephew, a niece who I think would really benefit from something like this, or a child themselves, can people just reach out to Team Sports for All? And
absolutely, yeah. I mean, and in answer to your previous question as well, we work very closely with community groups, with Uniting, AusChild, and people that are working day in, day out with these families to support them. And they know about Team Sports for All because we have our coordinators working closely with them. So if they hear, okay, so there's an interest in sport there, that might be helpful, they'll connect us directly with that family, and that family will then help and support us. But absolutely, if people know the people out there that are in, you know, extreme financial disadvantage, people can be referred through our website. And I'd encourage everyone to go to teamsportsforall.com.au especially if they want to donate or support a child as well,
or volunteer.
As referring childs or volunteer, absolutely.
Yeah, Simon, congratulations. What an incredible work you and your team does. So thanks so much.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Simon Davies is the CEO of Team Sports for All. So if you either want to volunteer, you want to donate, you want to refer a child, or maybe you're a club and you think, how can we get involved, throw Team Sports for All into your search engines. They are looking after, predominantly at the moment, Rochelle, they're looking after metropolitan Melbourne and some of those fringe areas of Melbourne, but they're really keen to move into regional Victoria as well. That idea that Simon was saying where no one knows, right, that they're a Team Sports for All kid, maybe except for the administrator at the top. How important is that?
Oh, that's so important. It's that stigma to feel that you belong, and that's really important. And We see that with the sports voucher system that the government has as well, that's anonymous. It's a voucher that the family can claim and sort of no one else knows about it, because they don't want to feel like they're the family or the individual that can't afford and they don't fit in. But what's really key is the sustainability of these opportunities.
Yeah.
So we can't just have one-off events that the child can play this year. Oh, but sorry, you know,
that funding's dried up next year.
Yeah, yeah, so we need to think about what are the, like, on the little levers that we can pull and push to minimise costs across a whole range of different things, so that everyone gets the opportunity to play and that they can maintain their participation long term.
It makes me think this whole time when we've been talking, Rochelle, that it is just that much easier and cheaper ultimately for a kid to be thrown a device, be on a screen, and you talk about sustainability. Yeah, it's fine if you get a one-off, but if you don't get this right, as a week-on-week idea, it'll be a lot easier just to have kids on their phones, essentially, or on someone's phone. So how important is it that we get this right?
Oh, it's so important for their health and well-being. You know, we talked about social connectedness, but the research that we've done and others has shown that those children that are involved in club-based sport have a range of different health and personal development benefits that those that don't play or those that drop out, they actually lose. And we know that, you know, mental health is a big issue amongst their adolescents and social connectedness. So it's a great way that they can connect with others and their communities, as well as the benefits of physical activity as well.
Keep fighting that fire, Rochelle. The work that you do is so important, and, you know, between us all of those small changes that we can make, you've got to remember they're people's lives that we're talking about, and this is not just about playing sport. It's about all forms of social connection. Dr. Rochelle Imey, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Director of Physical Activity and Sports Insight Group at Federation University. Jeremy Story Carter could not keep up with the texts at all. It's a really, really big issue. It was interesting. One text came in and said, Rochelle, haven't you spoken about this before? Yes, we have. And we will continue to speak about it, because it is not just about sport and it's not just about that individual and that family. It impacts us all.
Yeah, and I'm a 35-year-old large adult child who to this day benefits from the fact that I got exposed to sport as a kid. I still play soccer, basketball and footy every week.
I'm just laughing you calling yourself a large adult child.
I have a bruise, a very childlike bruise on my leg at the moment, which speaks to that very fact. But I think if I didn't have access to that, my life, my connection to the community around me and the places I'm able to go and connect with other people over that, it's been profound, and I would be so sad if I didn't have that.
Don't forget, The Conversation Hour is also a podcast. We have done lots of programs looking at the importance of community sports. So subscribe, go to the ABC Listen app, or chuck Conversation Hour into your search engine. There are plenty of programs on that you can listen to on The Conversation Hour podcast. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.